Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Dave Nowacki, 21 years of career experience, a sergeant on Engine 50 with Detroit Fire Department, creator of the Fourth Man Fire. Dave isn't a legacy firefighter. He never dreamed at a young age of joining the fire service. What got Dave into the profession was a friend who told him all things he gets to do while on the job, and he gets to do it all while working only 9 days a month. Yep, he admits that, 100%. But once he got in, he was all in making sure he continues to be the best version of himself. Dave is very tradition and history-based when it comes to the job. After hearing his experience and viewpoints, you'll understand why. With that, I present Dave Nowacki.
Well, my name's Dave Nowacki. 21 years in the fire service through the city of Detroit. Started in 2004. It seems like yesterday, really. It flies.
Yeah.
It's crazy. You don't think about it very often, but then every once in a while I'm like, my gosh, it's been that long. I wasn't a legacy guy. I have no family on the job. Just out of the blue, I kind of knew what the city of Detroit firemen were all about because I was in the city. I used to work on the east side of Detroit as helping inner city youth at a private basketball camps and things like that. And so I kind of knew what these firemen were doing because I was watching houses burn and watching these guys rush in and do stuff. I really didn't think of it. I didn't give a second thought until I had a buddy of mine who was a Detroit firefighter. I had to take him home one day, just chance encounter. And he was like, you got to come out and work for us. We're looking for guys like you. And I was like, yeah, I'll think about it. He's like, 9 days a month. And I'm like, where do I sign up? So I'm definitely not one of those guys who's like, oh, from the age of two, I wanted to be a fireman. You know, it just wasn't, that's not how it went for me. But, right out of the academy, first day on the job in the field, I was like, this is it. This is all I ever want to do with my life. You know, where has this been my whole life? You know? It's been a wonderful ride ever since. So it's been good.
Okay. Born and raised in Detroit?
No. I was born on the other side of the state of Michigan. Moved to Alaska when I was 12. That's where I kind of caught the bug of like rescue work. My stepdad was a pilot, flew small airplanes, volunteered for search and rescue missions. You know, up in Alaska, it's the Wild West, right? And kind of caught that bug then, you know, that kind of high intensity adrenaline pumping type work. And so when I moved back to Detroit, I was working with underprivileged kids. And then when he said, hey, you can kick in doors and put out fire for a living for 9 days a month, I'm like, you just scratched my itch, bro. Okay. So yeah, it was a perfect match made in heaven.
Okay. So once you found out the ins and outs, you put in, you got accepted. Did you get accepted your first time or did it take a couple times?
No, miracle, right? I mean, so when I applied, there was 14,000 applications that were handed out. Lying down the street from the municipal building that it was, all the physical fitness tests were done. They hired 35 guys. So.
Damn. Out of 14,000.
Yeah. So just to show you how much the fire service has changed, our last hiring last year, I think they handed out like 300 applications.
Wow.
And they couldn't find enough. I mean, that's pretty generally a problem all over is finding people in the fire service now. Whereas it seemed like everyone wanted to be a fireman. 20 years ago. I mean, you just had to turn people away. So, yeah, things have changed quite a bit. But, yeah, 35 guys out of 14,000 applications. I guess I was just lucky.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you go through the process. What was your experience like going through rookie school, or however they call it, and how long was the process?
So our academy, our fire academy is paramilitary, just like most fire academies are. You start as a trial man. That's what we call them in Detroit. Not probies, not cadets, trial men. So I guess you're just on trial for the year, right? So it's tw ours was 21 weeks. So we did 21 weeks in the academy, got out. We did 6 months in the field. So pretty close to a year is what your trial man service is. 6 months in the field, you do out of those, we did 4 months on an engine, 2 months on a truck-ish. Everyone had a little different experience. And yeah, then they gave you your badge. You were badged in and went on your way.
Okay.
So trial service in Detroit was it was what you would expect Detroit would be back then. When I started, there was 26 to 32 structure fires a night in the city. And so I know we all shake our head because it just seems impossible. Like there's no way, but there was. It was just that wild back then. So the training was more of a knee in your behind, right? It was less instruction, more of repetition. When I came on, there was still a lot of Vietnam era type men who are now making company officer, and those guys weren't known for their they weren't known for their refinement, right? They were just
Right.
more of like grunts, like what you would think a salty fireman was, right? Big mustache, gruff voice, larger than life legend, and he would just put his boot right in the back of you and say, "Let's go." And you would enter through the front door and push it till it was gone. And their thought process was, do this enough where it just becomes normal. You weren't learning about vent, and you weren't learning about looking for the types and characteristics of smoke. You weren't not that you weren't learning that, but you weren't being told that's what it was.
Right.
They didn't have all the fancy terms in their vocabulary. They just knew how to teach by pushing. And so you just pushed and you learned after every fire. And by the end of the year, I think I had 90 hours of fire service, average fire about an hour. So 90 fires under my belt by the time I got my badge. And so that's how I learned. Trial by fire, right? That's what it
Right,
was.
right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, what was your first assignment when you got out of the academy?
I started at Engine 41, which is on the east side of Detroit. It's a single house, so just one engine. We have single camps and double camps, we call them, or triple camps. That's just the lingo we have. We don't have any triple camps anymore. We used to have a couple places that had an engine truck and a squad. Everything we have now is single resource or double resource kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. And upon walking through those doors, were you nervous as hell, or
Oh
was
my God.
it?
You can't even imagine. So it's everything, right? I mean, your first day of school's rough, but when you've been indoctrinated to be scared of these living legends, right? You'd see them come through the academy while they were doing some training or getting some gear or whatever. But it was like the Pope showed up, right? You just kind of stayed in the back and tried not to make any noise. And so when I got assigned, I had guys tell me, look, you better go the day before. Like, try to have lunch with them, wash all the dishes, do all the things, and introduce yourself. And my guys were, as they would with new guy, they razz you and a lot of joking around. But yeah, it was larger than life. I walked into a firehouse that is 100 years old. It still has the horse stalls in the back. I mean, like you walked into like history where thousands of men have gone before. So it was overwhelming just in that very like visual aspect. And then right off the rip, we were running and gunning. So I don't even remember my first fires. A lot of guys are like, "Oh yeah, I remember my first." It was a blur, to be honest. It was just a blur of just, okay, this is what we're doing today, you know. So it was fun.
Okay. Did you try to find those firefighters you wanted to emulate, or was that pretty much a non-negotiable? Was it like where every single person on that crew, they were already dialed in?
I guess two answers. So I was fortunate. Everyone has their own experience, right? And I had a sergeant who was just, I mean, I would say he's a living legend. Even to this day, people, when I say his name, they go, "Oh, you were under him." And it was usually a love hate, like, "Oh, that guy is like bull on backdraft," or,
Okay.
"Man, he always got me this or that." You know, he was love or hate because he was all about fire. And kind of like that divide, you got to him and he was a fork in the road. You either became better or you didn't like what he had to say to you. He was about 6'3" and talked real quiet, had a few words to say. And the rest was just let's go to work. So I had an incredible experience my first year where he would teach by doing, but he was so calm. We would go into these big two family, four family flats in on the east side, and we'd go past a little fire here and there. Back then, little fire didn't matter. We're going to that big seat of the fire, right? And we'd sit there and he'd say, "Okay, don't open up yet. Let's watch this thing." And it was literally watching fire move, watching it breathe. And I'm sitting here dying a thousand deaths, right? I'm hot, my ears are hurting. You know, back then it wasn't all Nomexes and safety gear. It was like you're feeling what you're feeling. And but if you look around, everyone else was doing it. So you went, "Okay, well, they're doing it, I can do it. I'm not gonna be that guy, right?"
Right.
But yeah, I mean, your experience isn't always the same. I always talk about to guys that are not from Detroit or not from the era that I started in, and they're kind of always apologetic. I said, "Boy, why would you apologize? I mean, you started where you started. You didn't necessarily pick your life, right? Just like I didn't pick yours, you didn't pick your, we didn't pick them. We just got where we got." And so I always tell people, don't apologize for where you started or what you did. You know, you're here now making it. Making it better, or you're not making it better, right? The fire service, at least.
Yeah.
But I was fortunate. I had a really good boss. I had really good crew around me. But you know what I love about the fire department then is it was a civil service job. It was all kinds of people, all walks of life. And had you brought a family member in and said, "This, welcome to this guy, introduce this guy," you'd go. You'd have family members going, "He's not a fireman," because he just doesn't look the type, right? That's what I love about civil service. It is from all walks of life, guys that were like garbage men, guys that are teachers, 18-year-old kids that have never had a job. You know, I love that diversity of the fire service, where I see things now, it seems to be like, okay, we only pick this type of person. Does he fit with our crew? Well, I don't want him to fit with our crew. I want him to be different, you know? And so, yeah, that's kind of where I came from. Very
Okay.
diverse. But then if you started in the 1st Battalion, where there wasn't as many fires, your experience was different, right? So yeah, wherever you came from, if you made the best of it, that was the important part.
Does Detroit have areas where fires are, infrequent and few in between?
So, yeah, in short, there's always been what we call rest camps, right? Little retirement camps.
Okay.
Guys go to kind of slow down. Even when it was super busy, there was always places that were slower, maybe not as slow as maybe now. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't speak on that, but there's always been places where it's been a little slower. Neighborhoods that have a little bit more money in them. You know, even Detroit has really nice neighborhoods. Downtown is looks beautiful now. There's always been some solid neighborhoods in the city. And so even when it was burning in those crazy war years, there was places that just were like, okay, we're missing them all. I just didn't want to be at those places.
Gotcha.
I wanted to be where some, if something was burning, I wanted to be there. And it was always that thing. It's like, I don't want someone's house to burn down, but if a house is going to burn, I want to be that guy that's there.
How long did it take for you to decide to promote, and what made you decide to do that? Like, I always like to call it, what tripped your breaker into going, yeah, I think I'm ready.
I still don't think I'm ready. I mean, that's my answer. So Detroit is old school. It's seniority driven. Just the old adage on the city of Detroit is just keep breathing, you'll make it. You'll promote, just keep breathing, right? Enough guys die or retire, you're gonna make it. And that sounds morbid and cruel, but that's how we roll, right? So it's always funny. It's like, bro, if you don't retire, I'm gonna push you down the stairs because I need to make sergeant sometime soon. So it took me 19, 20 years to make sergeant, which I think everyone should wait that long.
I don't, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you.
So, yeah, it's cool to have the title. It's cool to have the pay. The pay is, listen, pay is everything, right? It don't matter how badass of firemen are you are, the utility company still wants their bill to be paid, right? So money is why we go to work. It's still the best job ever, and I can see why a lot of people do it for free. I'm not that guy. I got to do it for money. But yeah, 19, 20 years to make sergeant. We call our firefighters deckies, just old school, riding the back deck. Then we have senior firefighters, which is like a unwritten title. You're the guy, the most senior of the house. You kind of, make the rules. People go to you before they go to the company officers. You kind of are the old man of the deckies. And then we have sergeants, which a lot of places don't have sergeants. We have sergeants, then lieutenants, captains, battalion chiefs. And then you're up in your administrative chiefs, your senior chiefs, duty chiefs, things like that, chief of department.
It to become sergeant, is that a tested position?
So, no, things have changed. We went through bankruptcy in 2014, right? Made history in the United States. During that time, our union contracts were being made null and void, right? There was no power in them. And so during that time, the city and the unions negotiated and changed everything. And before that, it was strictly seniority. You're the next guy up, you make sergeant. You're next guy up, you make chief. That was how it worked. Even including the senior chief. If you were the next senior chief, you made that. And then chief of department was also. So everything was seniority in the city until 2014. It started to change. There became appointed positions, chief of departments appointed, senior chiefs. Battalion chiefs on down are still seniority driven, but you have to have certain credentials to get them. But knowing as long as you have them, you'll be promoted next up, it's still seniority. You understand? So, kind of when you're getting close, you make sure you have your company officer one, company officer two. Putting all your ducks in order, right? You're not on attendance control, and then you're no questions asked, you're next up.
So I have a question. Only answer it if you feel comfortable. I always like to say that. Do you have certain individuals in company officer roles, even though that they've been there, seniority wise, that they shouldn't have it?
I mean, yeah, sure. I shouldn't say shouldn't have it. So, like, the union side of me goes, okay, you want as many people to be employed as possible with the highest wage. And you want them to retire with a good retirement. So seniority is created to be equal for everyone, right? In a perfect world, you know, everyone's going to have the ability, if they start enough, to make battalion chief and retire with a good retirement. So that's my qualification, like deserving from a standpoint of, are they good at teaching? Are they good at leading? That's a different definition of deserving as of, hey, I started, it's a union job. He should be able to retire with a decent retirement. Seniority is tricky, right? People, that's like the number one question, seniority versus testing. That was like a hot question for years. I am biased. Seniority is a great thing. Detroit was running 26 to 30, 32 structure fires a night, and yet our line of duty deaths did not reflect that.
Correct.
Our injuries do not reflect that. Because there's some freedom and there's some safety in that if that guy's wearing a red helmet, he's been around for a while. You know? So I didn't have to qualify my, oh, I'm looking for a guy that I can feel like he's going to protect me or keep me safe. Everyone that was company officer had at least 20 years on. So there is some safety in that seniority. Now, there's also guys that just keep breathing, right?
All right.
And they may have learned how to hide. We call them shepherds, you know, guys with a hook behind the door,
Okay.
yard breathers, dry coats, whatever you call them. They were and are going to be the guys that find places to hide. And so when they make boss, everyone kind of knows who they are, you know. It's not that they have to wear the scarlet letter on them or anything like that. Guys know, you know, oh, that guy's a worker. That guy's going to tell you something crazy. Or, you know, he's just not going to push you or he's not going to be with you. But I look at it like the adage of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Like the seniority system's great. Yes, are there some people that abuse it or slip through the cracks? Sure. There always is going to be. But the opposite swing of that pendulum is that 5-year guy that's in charge of a fire scene. I mean, at the end of the day, our job is to save lives and protect property by any means necessary, right? And so you could get 10 fires that are just bread and butter, cookie cutter, easy. And then that 11th fire could be, we got to make all the right decisions or someone's not coming home. And so do I want a 5-year guy with limited experience making those calls? Because if he's in charge, he's going to have to make those calls, or even worse, not make the call, right? And I think statistically, you know, I don't have the numbers backing me right here, but I think statistically, you find a lot more line of duty deaths in these smaller communities, and I would venture to say there's a lot more testing based leadership. And maybe it's not just that, maybe it's a lot of things. I'm sure it is a lot of things that go into these line of duty deaths, these big injuries. And anyone, including yourself, we've gone through enough, you know, it was a compilation of a lot of things that led up to that. But I think seniority is paramount. Having that guy that's been in a handful of fires each month, or even just more time in general, being able to look at that and go, I couldn't tell you why, but that just doesn't look right. Oh, okay. Well, if you don't think it looks right, we ain't going in. Sure enough, thing comes down. You know, is where someone else goes, well, it doesn't look bad. I mean, it's checking all the boxes I learned about in the academy, in the company officer school, and all my books and certificates, it looks good to me. That's wildly different than the guy goes, you know what? It just don't pass the sniff test. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I'm big on seniority. I love it. It took me 20 years to make sergeant. Other guys are going, oh, that's such a long time. The guys I hang out with out in the region and teach, they're all seemingly younger than me that made rank a lot quicker. But at the end of the day, man, I got to kick in doors, running and burning buildings for 20 years before I had to give up the pipe.
Right.
And I still want the nozzle. Give it to me, but those days are numbered now, you know. So.
So, what is so pretty much as sergeant, and I'm assuming also as lieutenant and as captain, your role now is to like conduct your 360, locate the fire, and just guide the back steps behind you. All right, this is where it is. Let's go and push. And you just pretty much, in a sense, point direct and kind of control.
I guess if I started from like how I operate, if we when I show up in the morning, I do paperwork, I do payroll, you know, I do all those things that any company officer would do. In Detroit, if we get a fire, we have first due, second due, third due. A box alarm in Detroit is three engines, a ladder truck, a squad, which is like, you know, a heavy rescue squad. And the ambulance and two chiefs, right? If I'm first, we're stretching. That's we're what we'd call SOP driven fire tactics. I guess the fancy word for other people call us cowboys. Everyone kind of knows what they're supposed to do. They get off
Right.
the rig and they do it.
Right.
We have incident command. We institute it, but it's more of a checkbox than a reality. And I guess I should qualify that. We do use incident command. The chief is in charge of that scene, and the second chief is usually our safety officer. But for the most part, if there's nothing going bad, he's pretty quiet. He's just relaying the information back to dispatch, and we do what we're supposed to do. So yeah, if I'm first engine, we're stretching. And so my guys pull off the Detroit bundle, which is our unique, hose load, and we reverse lay to a hydrant from the fire to the hydrant, and our guys start flaking out their line, and I usually go in and trying to find that fire, disappear in for a minute. Hey guys, I'll be back a second. I'm just gonna try to find that fire, and then I'll come back and meet up with them. And we do a 270, 360. You know, we have, I guess we I should qualify that. We have so many guys coming from some short distances that our entire box is there within 3 minutes. I mean, so whereas in the country, you better do your own 360. You better do your own flake out. You better do your own water supply, because you ain't getting people coming for a minute. Whereas in the city of Detroit, our next engine's right on our tail. So I teach my young guys, there's a 360 to be done. You should at least see three sides yourself while you're flaking out line. We call it a down and dirty 270. We don't have walkout basements. We don't have those weird things that we got to make sure you see that. We have a lot of different styles of construction, but we pretty much know everything. There's not too many surprises in the city. You
Right.
know, we're an old city. We have a lot of old legacy constructed houses. And so we get that 270 done. And usually by the time someone's already done a 360, and open the front door and go in.
Okay. 20 years. That's wild. 20 years. All right. So my next question for you is what is the term aggressive mean to you, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I always look back at the motto of the fire service: save lives, protect property. So aggressive to us, to me, is making an interior push. We live in a city or work in a city that is impoverished in many areas. We have what we call vacant dwellings. We probably still have tens of thousands of vacant dwellings in the city. But with that, a lot of homelessness too. So it ain't vacant till I say it's vacant, is
Okay.
my mentality. As it should be, I think, with any fireman, anywhere you work, whether you work in the ritziest neighborhood or the poorest, it ain't vacant till I clear it. And there's many reasons there. For Detroit, it's because it's probably not vacant. There could be squatters, there could be people. Just because it looks like someone's not living there doesn't mean their lifestyle is just not different than mine. Just because there's not a nice couch and sofa and bed in there doesn't mean people aren't, functioning in that house. And so if I'm hitting it hard from the yard, I have no qualification inside. I have no way of telling what's going on. Sure, the UL testing can show that this is going to do this and this and this. At the end of the day, if you're not inside, you just don't know what's going on. And I'll get a lot of flack for that, I'm sure. I always do. There's incident command that, nowadays it's pull up in the SUV, roll up the windows, lock the doors, and you got a little cheat sheet in front of you. I got nothing against that. That's not what I grew up in. I prefer that the decisions are made from the inside out, And there's certain decisions guys go, oh yeah, I can see what he can't because I'm outside. We need to pull those guys. But again, that's a 30-year chief, 35-year chief that's making that decision. If he says there's something wrong, I'm out. If I say I can hit it, I can make it, then he's usually like, hey, I'm good. So there's that balance of trust and confidence. And if we weren't aggressive, then number one, there would be a lot more probably squatters that die in these fires. We'd have a lot more houses on the block that catch fire because we have an old community, construction wise. And there are a lot of dried up old wood houses. And if I didn't put that house out in 20 minutes, then the next house is going to catch on fire. And then we're just going to lose the block. We had a commissioner a long time ago, came from a different state, and his motto was let it burn. He caught a lot of flack from us. And whether he truly meant to let everything burn or not, that's besides the point. We aren't that fire department. So aggressive firefighting is going in, putting the fire out from the inside whenever possible. I teach my kids, I call them kids, the young guys coming up, that it's not the amount of fire that's the problem, right? If that was, we wouldn't go to bonfires with kegs and go out and party all night. It's too much fire, right? It's not the fire that's the problem, it's the container that the fire's in. And so that's the thing that kills guys. That's the thing that makes it hot. That's the thing that changes everything. It's the container. So understanding fire behavior for me is paramount, but also understanding building construction and how fire behaves within that. So if you can marry those two, fire behavior and building construction, and critically think about it, not just give me cookie cutter answers, that makes a good aggressive fireman because an aggressive fireman is confident, can think on his own, has been given the ability to think on his own, right? Because that's key. Because there's a lot of places that you're not allowed to think, just do.
Just do. Yep.
And so when it comes time, when it's not a vacant dwelling, when there are people trapped deep up on the second floor, our guys don't hesitate because they've practiced all the time treating every house the same. And so when it's go time, when it's that man maker of a house fire, same old deal, same song and dance, right? Nothing changes. And so I think that's probably to get on my soapbox, that's something that's being changed that could be a little dangerous, I think. When we start putting a little too much emphasis on the risk versus reward paradigm and it starts leaning more and more to what I call the everyone goes home mentality, we start becoming so safe that we become fire monitors more than we become firefighters. And when it's time to pull up your big boy pants, you have never been tested. Like, I don't want, if my house is on fire, this is the same thing everyone says. I want cowboys. I want crazy dudes that are just gonna go and do whatever it takes to save my house and my valuables and my family, my loved ones. I don't want an incident commander coming off and throwing a safety vest on, looking around and making sure there's a tarp on the ground. I could care less about that if it's my house, you know? And so if we look at it from that paradigm, we always pull back and look from a citizen viewpoint. What are we doing? What are we making sure that's happening before we affect change? Oh, I gotta check off all my box and make sure all my guys are in place. What's happening at that house? What's that homeowner seeing? You know what I mean? That's where my passion is. And sometimes it gets the best of me and gets me in precarious positions when I'm out talking to people. But at the end of the day, I can't change me. That's just how I am. But aggressive is paramount. An aggressive fireman could be a guy who on the side is a librarian. I mean, these guys know how to turn it on. And so just because you have showcase muscles, you were born into a firefighter family, you have the right haircut, that to me don't make anything. You know, I got a crew that looks motley. I have a very motley crew, but man, those guys are dogs, and that's what I care about. Black, white, short, small, fat, in shape, you know, autistic, I don't care. I don't care what your deal is. Being aggressive interior firefighters that are confident, that's what I want on my crew.
Right. It's probably safe to say that your fire commissioner now is it are they from within Detroit? So that way they keep that aggressive mindset going.
I mean, there's challenges, and I would say that there's challenges on that leadership level that I don't know about and I don't understand. When I was young, it was more like, ah, screw them, you know, it's us versus them. As I get older, I realize that there's challenges everywhere. And so their game that they have to play, even though it's not a game, but you know what I mean, they have parameters they have to work within that are unknown to me. But we traditionally hire and promote from within. So we are our chief of department, our commissioner, our second deputy commissioners, all of our administrations, save for a few, are from our ranks. So they were here when things were different. They understand the changes. We do EMS now, where traditionally we were just fire only. So that's a huge thing to work through. It's very complex. That's for another podcast. But there are issues where our guys, when we came out until 3 or 4 years ago, it was fire, 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 fire. Now our the kids that are hired, they're EMS, they're dual role. So they spend as much time on EMS rigs as they do fire rigs. So that's a challenge in itself, right? You're doing two jobs. The plumber is now doing electrical work, you know, to put it plainly. And so, that's a challenge for them and for me teaching them. Their mind is in two different places. Whereas, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15, you had one singular job, one singular focus. So challenging times, the fire service has changed. My big thing is we always want to try to maintain that old school aggressive mentality. I'm very against mission drift. You've heard that before, that term where you started with a mission that was in one place and it slowly drifted over to other things. You know, the main thing is should be always the main thing. And I think we have leadership that is understanding of that. And at the same time, change is inevitable, right? When we first got lighter tanks from steel tanks, we're like, ah, man, I want the old tank, you know. When we got new technology in our masks, oh man, screw that, you know. When we got hoods, ah, don't wear those things. When we got chainsaws, don't use that. We got sledgehammers. So change is inevitable. And it's also hard. Embracing it, is challenging.
Does Detroit still use sledgehammers for roof ventilation, or do you guys traditionally use the saws?
Combination.
Okay.
We got saws, oh, maybe 15 years ago, 10 years ago, we started using vent saws, which sounds crazy, but that's just how it worked. We didn't have them. We have different construction. You have to qualify it by knowing your construction again, right? I have legacy houses. Those are slat roof houses. They have slats underneath and tar paper and shingles. So what I can open up a roof with on a sledgehammer, if I took one up on OSB now, I'm probably not effective. I probably need that chainsaw on an OSB roof, you know? But our techniques that were formulated through thousands and thousands of fires, they work well. And so I'm a sledgehammer guy. I'm going to take a sledge to the roof and I'm going to put a big hole in the roof through my own techniques that were passed down before
Right.
from guys before me. But then you got young guys and we teach them to use those saws and they use them well, right? I think it's like anything. Give me 5 gallon buckets and a 10 speed and I can put a fire out, right? I just have to do that enough where I'm good at it, you know.
Right.
Now we have, you know, we went from horses, and when we left horses, guys were like, "I'm not driving one of them vehicles." Horses always start, you know. There's always like technological
Right.
change, and guys are like, "I don't embrace it." But I think once you embrace any of the changes and then work with them, so you become confident and efficient with them, you know, some of that technology is good as long as this, you don't embrace it and it becomes a crutch, right? Technology can become a crutch. A good example of a crutch technology that is also a great technology is thermal imaging, right? I love it. It is a great tool, but it is only one of my tools. The guy that is constantly in his face on the thermal imaging, that's a crutch. He's not seeing what's happening. He's not feeling the atmosphere change. He's using one piece of technology and he's replacing all his other observations,
Right.
right? So I think it's like gambling, right? With cards. I can't just have one good card to win the hand. I gotta have a good combination of cards. And so I teach, try to teach my guys, you know, using all the senses you have, all the information you have to be able to make those decisions. You know, it's not just one thing that's gonna make you make that choice.
Right.
Or it shouldn't be. And then at the end of the day, if we don't have an incident commander on scene, we don't have anybody making calls. That kid or that young firefighter is still confident enough to use critical thinking and affect change, choose his tactics. And that's what I want. I want 20 guys that could do this job, not one incident commander and 20 qualified academy guys. Sorry. Sorry, my passion in that, it always comes out. It's like, I really want guys to understand fire ground IQ. You know, when we're, a lot of us play basketball, baseball, these coaches always talked about having good baseball IQ or good basketball IQ, understanding the game, not just understanding how to shoot or how to defend, but understanding how the game works. So you can insert yourself in any position and be able to be effective because you're making decisions based on your IQ of the sport. And so when I talk around the country or even to my guys local, I talk about fire ground IQ. So you have to have enough knowledge there to be able to pour that into your brain and come out with an answer, you know?
Definitely. Okay. It pretty much goes hand in hand with the on the job training, live fire based training versus the books.
Yeah. I mean, books are good, right? I mean, I'm reading books all the time. I don't discount classroom knowledge. But you have to marry the two.
Right.
The guys writing books very, very likely haven't fought fires in 15 years. I mean, the guys designing rigs, that's there lies the issue. When we start separating the guys that are doing from the guys that are writing curriculum, designing rigs, you know, when those two are separated and not married, it's a problem.
It is a problem for the organization, for sure.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's a problem for the citizens. It's a problem for the guys on the fire ground. I mean, it's we have a dangerous job. When people say our motto is everyone goes home, well, you know what? Not everyone goes home. They just don't. I wish that were true. I wish that were true 100% of the time. It's not. We know. I don't even know how many line of duty deaths we've had this year. I remembered and I lost count. Not everyone goes home because this is not an accounting job. It's just not, and it shouldn't be. Because to in order to for me to affect change in someone's worst day of their life on a fire scene, I have to place myself in a little bit of danger. And when we stop doing that, we might as well hang up our bunker gear.
What's your take on individuals that sign up for this profession and just want to stay mediocre? Like, there are firefighters out there that are into the job 24/7. I get it. I love it. I try to make sure I find my balance between fire and family. But the individuals that come in and maybe they had that spark and then they lost it, and there's either no way of getting it back or maybe there's a way to get it back, but it takes an arm and a leg to do it. But especially the ones that come in knowing what the job entails and they just want to do the bare minimum.
Yeah. I mean, the short answer is I got no place for those people. I got no patience for them. The ones that started and have maintained a zero mentality, I got no place for them. But I'll speak on the area of the guys that have kind of lost their passion. They started strong. I have nothing but love for those guys because my life is not the same as it was when I was 20. People go through divorce, they go through addiction, they go through financial problems. The fire department is a great place, best job on earth, but it is a job, it is a vocation. And I'm not trying to speak down on it, but at the end of the day, you have so many other things that affect your life, your health, depression, all the things that are coming out with PTSD. Life changes, and sometimes you just lose your love for things. And that's why people go through divorces, right? They started, and this is the love of my life, and then they didn't put the work in, or they lost it, or something happened, and they're like, yeah, I'm done. So for me to expect a guy from day one being 90 miles an hour to stay that way his whole career, that's ridiculous. That we're not robots. We're not drones. We're human beings, and we have bad days. And I've had them too. I've had times where guys were like, hey, I need you to be a little more here. You know, whether I was starting a business on the side or getting married or, you know, whatever it was, my mind was elsewhere. And I had good company officers or really just mentors say, hey, we need you here though. We want you here. And so I think there's a large majority of guys that are somewhere in there. They're not the ball of fire, but they're not a complete zero. And that's our job with these podcasts and social influencing and being company officers and even just senior on the fire department. Those are our guys we have to reach because they're all reachable. You know what I mean? There's what there it, it's a switch that just needs to be flipped back on. And so I am very much against these guys who just talk down, like, oh, that guy's nah, blah, blah, blah. He's nothing. Well, have you tried to reach him? Have you tried to get him involved? Have you continued to try just because you say it once and that guy's not involved? You know, try different ways. I mean, some guys are just not going to be that physical guy, like that physical guru that's always out working out at the station. I'm okay with the guy with the beer belly that can outwork almost everyone on that scene. I'm okay with the book nerd who struggles with thinking he knows it all, but he's submissive enough to understand that maybe he doesn't. I'm good with the 90-pound girl that has worked her tail off to get through a men's world academy, that is wanting to do the job, that can do the job, just has to work a lot harder because of whatever reason. I want that motley crew. I want the real world human being, crappy. This is what life was giving me. I want that crew. Because that's real life. Because that's the crew that will make the decisions. And those decisions will be meaningful because they're really thinking about it. They're just not type A robots that look great in a fire department t-shirt. Because I don't really care. I don't care about your polished boots. I don't care about your shiny axe. None of that to me is the definition of professionalism. I understand why people say it is. I do get it. You want pride in the job. But at the end of the day, it's not your axe that's shined or not shined. It's that person behind it. It's the heart behind them.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
no, I love it. I love it. Okay. If I can ask you a question, when, and this is personal for you, when Detroit went through the whole bankruptcy thing, was there ever a time where you're like, fuck, like I gotta get out of here, or I can't believe this is happening? And how hard was it? I'm sure that wasn't easy.
Yes. Yes to everything. I mean, it was wild. The morale was at all-time low, for sure. You had this brotherhood, strong union. This is the way we've always done it. And then all of a sudden, the carpet's pulled out from under you. So, backstory is when I got hired on the city of Detroit, before I even got my badge or I got my probation service, I was laid off. So they went through a major financial crisis and they laid us off. I think they laid off about 100 guys and I was caught up in that. So I was 3 weeks away from getting badged. And instead of a badge, I got a pink slip. And so that, however things start in your career, that's how, that really makes the trajectory. And so I was kind of like when the bankruptcy happened, and I eventually got my job back, 16 months later, I was back in it doing it.
16 months.
16 months I was off.
Damn.
Yep. And there was guys off for a little less and a little bit more. They kind of trickled back in. But yeah, that's how the city was. I mean, we were riding rigs that had cardboard and duct tape holding things together, quite literally. Guys were like, "What's wrong with your gear?" Well, guess what? There was no extra gear. So my gear looks a little tattered and green and salty, and that's just how we did. You learned how to do with less. So we were already dealing with that whole thing, and then bankruptcy, our one thing that everyone looked forward to, our pension, was taken from us. Our contracts were taken from us. And they said, "Hey, you guys did a great job, but now you're doing EMS too. You're going to do it for less pay. And you lost your contract. So if you don't sign this contract, we're going to do whatever we want." So it was a rough time. And yeah, I thought about leaving, but I already had 10 years on at the job. You're invested in people, not just the place. And so I stayed, obviously. And there was guys that went elsewhere. Great. They decided they were better off somewhere else, and they made a home somewhere doing something else. So yeah, a lot of change, and it was devastating. And I think it's in many ways we're still recovering. The firemen, at least, are. But the guys that are coming on now, they don't know about that. They didn't know about the war years.
Right.
It's great to say, "Well, when I came on, I was doing it." But, or I hear guys, "Well, the city ain't burning like it used to." These kids don't want to hear that. They like the war stories. Don't get me wrong, those are good learning things for them. It builds confidence in their company officers that those guys are salty dogs that can do it, but they came on when they came on. We get 7 fires a night in the city. That's a lot of fires.
Still a lot,
But that's
yeah.
but it ain't 32, you know? So they don't want to hear it ain't burning like it used to, because let's be honest, if it did start burning like it used to, none of that would, it'd all be a moot point, right? It could change tomorrow, right? That's the craziness and the beauty of frontline workers, right? We as the economy changes, as government changes, as social unrest happens, we're first responders, right? So when things go bad, it's not like, well, let's ease on into this. No, it's today. It happened today, and we got to be ready today. So no one wants to hear, I ain't burning like you used to. These kids just want to know how to fight fire confidently. And so if we aren't running into vacant dwellings 3 or 4 times a day, guess what we got to do as leadership? We got to find a nice burn box, and we got to start burning in those. We got to find ways of teaching these guys and overcoming the fact that we ain't getting the reps in. What the suburbs have been doing forever, now we're having to deal with. Forever, the suburbs ain't been burning. So they have developed ways of teaching these kids how to learn on the fire ground without getting fire grounds. And we're now having to do that too. So we're learning a lot. We're changing a lot. I think we've rose to the occasion. I think the Detroit Fire Department's not dead. The aggressive place, it's going to stay aggressive as long as there's a few aggressive dogs up top. So.
And if I can ask, or yeah, I'm gonna ask, but only if you want to answer, I should have said. Did you get to receive your pension back?
So I will retire with 2 separate pensions. I
Okay.
have my 10-year, at 10 years, my last pension froze, you know, and so it's just sitting there. And then I started a new pension, a hybrid pension, they call it, and it started putting into that one. My retirement won't look like it used to.
Okay.
I'm not going to try to cry about that anymore. I did enough of that. It is what it is. I got that halfway pension, 2 separate things, not quite put together, but I got something. There's places out there that don't have anything. It's like, well, you're doing matching 401ks or, yeah. No, I still have a pension, and I'll get some Social Security, you know, because our state just passed some rules that we'll also get some of the Social Security we worked for, because a lot of guys work on the side, you know.
Right.
So we put our time in with Social Security. Yeah, so great job. And for the kids, they only know what it is now, and it is going to be a great job for them. A little more complicated than it was for me. But there's some good guys out there all across the nation. There's some young guns that just want to work. And that's what I want. That's what you want, right?
Yeah. No, that's definitely. Okay. You were on back in the, you we'll just say war years for Detroit. So, dude, like when you got off shift and you went home, if you went home, I don't know if you had a side job, but did you just crash at least for that day to recover?
Yeah, our yes, yeah. So, you know, when people talk about the war years, they usually look at like New York City, and that's what they kind of talk about. We kind of use that label, the war years. Things in Detroit just seem to last longer. So, you know, where Detroit has gone through evolutions of being on fire and not on fire since the very beginning. Our very motto is, from the ashes we will rise. If that tells you anything about the city, it burned during race riots in the 40s. It burned during upheavals in the 60s. It burned heavy in the 80s and 90s. I caught the tail end into the early 2000s, where it was still crazy. And it's been better, but that doesn't mean that city can't change overnight and do it again. And if time is any history is any indicator, it will eventually.
It's yeah, I'm about to say, yeah.
You know, if we go through life and we never look back at history as indicators, well, then we're blind. You know, I would love to see the city never burn again. I mean, that would be great. That side of me that really wants best for citizens. There's a part of me goes, man, I'd have to go find another place because I've got to go find a house to fight fires in. Because there's an itch there I want to be part of, right? So, yeah, I kind of lost myself. What were we even talking about?
No, you're talking about, which is, history does repeat itself,
It
and
does.
there will be a point in Detroit's lifespan where, unfortunately, that's going to occur again. Something's going to happen to cause that.
Sure. And so those years were fun because when you're busy fighting fires and you're doing your job, all the administration just leaves you alone because you're doing it. You're out there just making change. They're like, I'm not gonna bother it. It ain't broke. And so we were allowed to do whatever we wanted. I mean, and you know, it's a bunch of boys, so you can automatically assume all the things that went on. But at the end of the day, everyone got off the rig and did their work, and in 40 minutes to an hour, went home and did it and got ready to do it again. And so, going home with a monoxide headache, you know, those pounding headaches, was not uncommon. My wife bitching at me because I turned the bathtub black. That was pretty common. You know what I mean? You were eating a lot back then. We're using SCBAs. I don't want to, you know, think
I
like you weren't,
understand
but
exactly
you
what you're
know,
saying.
you're absorbing all that
That's right.
carcinogens, that all those that crap all day and night. And then yeah, we were on a Kelly schedule back then, so we were working one extra day than we do now. Yeah, you were exhausted, but I mean, it's that exhaustion, like you fall back and you go to sleep and you feel good about your life. Whereas I think the exhaustion for the fire service in general now is different. You give me 12 medical runs and I'm exhausted, but I kind of want to kick my dog. Do you know what I mean? Like I kind of am edgy. I'm kind of snappy. I've seen a lot more death in the last 10 years fighting fires and doing medical than I ever did the first 10 years. Because I'm in people's houses. You know what I mean? I'm seeing the evil that goes on at a much more intimate level. And I think that really does take it out of you. And that's why the PTSD and the mental health conversation, rightfully so, are big. Because your brain processes those things different. Man, when I was just kicking doors, bashing windows, and running into flames. I mean, any kid in America would think that's cool. That's fun. That's awesome. You know, it saved the fire department saved my life, you know. I mean, in a lot of ways, I think there's a lot of people like that. I was dealing with a lot of issues back then, and being able to just break things and push myself, that was my therapy. And it kept me from making choices that were probably not good choices. So, yeah, they were fun times. Like I said, if I could go back to those times, I would take the pay cut. When we started working, when you get hired on the city back then, you qualified for food stamps still, if you had a family. That's how low the pay was. And how many applicants were there? 14,000
14,000.
for making food stamp money, and now you're paying guys really well, and you can't find them. What's that say? What's that say about where we're at in the fire service? There's something going on there, and I think it's work conditions.
Absolutely.
I think it's brotherhood and work conditions. Give me a 10-speed, half a bunker gear set with burned up boots and food stamps, and I will show up to work every day, and I will stay late because I just want to be with the boys. But give me a nice shiny rig and more money and change the working conditions, and now you can't find people.
Yep.
And good leadership is watching that. And I think they're starting to see and draw their own conclusions from that. The good leaders that are willing to be honest with themselves and say, okay, there's something going on here we need to get in front of. Because eventually, it's going to be a much bigger issue than it is now.
No, that's a fact. That's a fact. I think there's several things. Society, where nobody really wants to do the type of work we do. And when I mean society, I mean, I think COVID changed a lot of things where people were like, oh, I can work from home now. Okay. Oh, hey, we want you to come back to the office. No, I'm good. I'm good working at home. We've proved as a country we can do that. I think that's occurred. I think the fact that certain organizations we are not showcasing the positive when it comes to the fire service. We're always talking about the negative, even though statistically, I forgot where I heard this. A pizza delivery driver in a certain part of the country, their life assessment is much more higher than a firefighter's. I think that we're not doing a good job showcasing what. We're not doing a good job showcasing and actually telling people what the fire service is truly like, the things you're going to see, the calls you're going to run, how, yes, depending on where you work, you're going to be busy, you're going to be tired. I think organizational, like command staff level BS gets involved in that too. I think there's a complexity of things, but I will also say there are departments and leaders that are doing it right, where they are attracting the right type of people. But I also think too, the firefighters that you have working right now are your biggest people to get people in the organization. And if they're not
Absolutely.
happy, why would I tell a buddy mine, hey, come work here at this department where we do XYZ bullshit, XYZ craziness? For what reason? Like I'm failing that person. I'm selling them false goods.
Yeah, I agree. There is a not one thing that points to it, but there obviously is a problem. And in the firehouse, I can be that person that solves some of those issues. I can't solve the generational problem with social media and what it's done to kids' brains or work ethic stuff, but I can try to inspire the kids that come through my doors. And it doesn't take much. It's not hard to inspire a guy, but you have to be inspirational. You can't be the zero trying to inspire because they'll see right through it. They know, oh, this guy's just talking his game, but he ain't doing, And we know from being out in the fire service and nationwide, from the conventions on down, there's some guys that are just talking all the right words. But they don't have a game. There is no game. You know what I mean? And I think people can still see through that. There is a need for the firemen of this world, of this nation, to kind of rise up, get past their, I struggle with imposter syndrome. Like, who wants to listen to me? No, I think everyone in this space probably does a little bit. And the fact is, if there's not guys that are talking about it, that have the time fighting fires, then who's going to? Well, then it's going to be some dude that just learned how to speak real well. And we're going to sit back, and the guys that have been doing it go, yeah, I call BS on that entire thing. But there's not enough voice to make that change. And so the fire service is going to do what the fire service does. The NFPA is going to continue writing SOPs. They're going to continue funding their CEO. They're going to continue giving us paperwork. That's what they do. And I don't expect a tiger to change its stripes. Do you know what I mean? They do what they do. I need to do what I'm supposed to do, and that's leave this place better than I found it. Because it's been good to me.
Right.
And I won't always be here. Pretty soon I'll be old. What's his name? Oh, I can't remember that guy's name. What's his name? Oh, yeah, he retired years back. And then I'll be dead in the grave. And then no one will remember me. But that fire station will still be there. Right? And so trying to leave it better than I found it because it's been good to me. If everyone just did that, we could really make a dent. We could really bring back aggressive firefighting.
That's fair. Okay. And we could go down that rabbit hole, but
Oh
I'm
man.
gonna leave it at that right there for sure. I do have another personal question I have. Fourth man fire. How did that start? Like, where did that come from within?
Yeah, it's interesting. I always like hearing about how things started. If I could turn this around on you and ask how you started the podcast, because the stuff just really is like, that's what's important, like how things started. And honestly, Fourth Man started more of a, just downtime scrolling, doom scrolling. I was like, oh yeah, I always saw stuff posted on us, but it was just in our little groups and stuff. I'm like, I'm gonna start posting some of our stuff. Not stuff that I've done. It's usually photographers that are taking pictures. It's not me saying cheese at a middle of a fire. But yeah, starting posting what we do. And then it became from that, it kind of changed to I like posting anything in the nation that guys were doing the job, kind of celebrating it. So it became more of a passion. And then it became, so it just has changed over time where it's like, oh, people really like this. Okay. It's always been faceless, The reason Fourth Man was named Fourth Man is really, it brings it back to a spiritual side of things. When I started working for the fire department, my wife had a real tough time with it because I'm pretty open with her about what goes on. So she knew the stuff, the evil that, let's be honest, without it, we wouldn't have jobs. And so she really struggled with my safety. I've had good friends die on the job, or get catastrophically injured. She knows those people. She's been to the hospital and funerals. She was having a hard time sleeping at night. And I remember almost everything about this. One day she said, I was just open up the word and the Bible. And she said, I turned to the scripture that talked about in general, I'll make it short, these young men who believed a certain way and they were in a community that didn't believe that way. And there was a king who thought of himself as a god. And he said, look, everyone needs to come and worship me and believe this way. And these three kids, these three Hebrew teenage boys said, no, this is what I was raised with. This is what I stand up and believe. And because of that, he threw them in a furnace. And the story goes that the soldiers that threw him in the furnace went looked through and said, why are there four guys in there? We threw three in there. And the fourth one looks like an angel. And those boys survived that furnace, coming out not even smelling like smoke. So the story is fourth man in the fire, right? That if I've been called to do something, whether it's being a garbage man or being a fireman, that the Lord is going to protect me if I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. And I believe, as a spiritual man, a guy who loves Jesus, a Christ follower, that there is some protection there. I mean, we're all appointed to die at some point, but that fear shouldn't form my tactics. It shouldn't change my choices. I'm supposed to do what I'm supposed to do, and at the end of the day, the Lord has to protect me. And so I named it Fourth Man Fire to kind of speak back, to throw back to that spiritual aspect that at the end of the day, we have to just trust that the Lord knows what's going on, that there's a higher being that is calling the shots, and I'm just here to do a job. I ain't that big. I'm not that special. The most important things in my life are family first and faith, those two, and I happen to love fighting fire. So the faith, family, fire, that's all, that's me. I can't separate myself from that. So that's why it's fourth man fire. That's why the logo has four men kind of helping each other out, some flames in the background. And up until this year, it's kind of been faceless. Like I've just kind of been putting stuff out. And organically, guys have said, hey, come on out and talk. Come do this, come do that. So now it's at that point, it's changed. And now I'm trying to go out there and inspire, hopefully young and old guys to make a change in the fire service, to get back out there and learn this job like it's supposed to be learned. And it's definitely not me. I feel like a failure most days. Like, who would want to hear me talk? But it's really not about me. There's a job to do, and there's something that needs to be said out there. I'll be the guy. I'll be that guy.
No, it makes sense.
And there's haters out there. I mean, there's keyboard warriors, man. Those dry coats, they got a bigger mouth than they do an axe. They love talking trash, and they have a lot of support and followers. But none of that matters. Not to me. If I can reach one young guy that's on the fence about what they're doing and how they're gonna do it, I'll stand up to all the bullies. You know, because he's gonna have to eventually too, if he wants to be a fireman. And I say fireman, I mean girl, guy, don't matter. Fireman is a term. Firefighter is that new term that we call everything, you know. But fireman, that's old school to me. That's my guy. At the end of if someone came at my funeral and they only said one thing and said, that was a good fireman, I'm good. I'm good. Put it on the gravestone. He was a good fireman. Because to me, that speaks to everything. That's the man, the character, the family, the faith. To me, that's all together. He was a good fireman. You know?
I respect it. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I respect it. Where I don't know how much longer you got with the trade. I don't know how many years you have to put in before you're eligible for retirement. But with that being said, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
Well, in Detroit, you hang it up at 60. You have to
60 years of age.
Yeah, you have to leave. I'm 48, just turned 48. Because of bankruptcy, because I got young kids, I'm definitely staying till I'm 60 for retirement, for health care, for all those reasons. You know, it's changed. When I was a deckie, I was pulling line off and fighting fire. Now I'm in there, I'm working. But I'm not pulling line as much. So I can stay, you know, it's not a terrible thing to stay. 60-year-old captain's not doing as much work as a 20-year-old deckie, nor is he expected to, you know. But I'll probably stay till I'm 60. I'd like to take fourth man on the road. I'd like to do more. I'd like to speak more where I'm wanted, where I fit in. I don't know if I'm an FDIC guy. I don't know, maybe. I don't know if I'm a corporate guy or if I'm just a, hey, let's just sit down and talk about this, you know. Yeah, we'll see where it's going. I got a lot of things in the works. I love the podcast stuff. That's fun. What you're doing is incredible. I see little big names here, but then I see average Joes, man. I see so many average Joes on your podcast. To me, that's it. That's what it's about. You know, because the big names are great and they're big names for a reason. They're valuable, insightful people. And maybe I'll be a big name or maybe I'll just be an average Joe my whole career. I don't know. But there's something to be said. And interviewing those guys and getting their story out, what you're doing is incredible. And I wanna be able to go speak to those guys and motivate them. And tell them, look, there's other ways of thinking about this. Just because this guy gave you a speech on this is how you move line, that don't mean that's the only way.
That's right.
Or
That's right.
blue card, you know, that's a big thing there. That don't mean that's the only way. You don't have to define yourself to a specific style. Detroit tactics are so vastly different from other places. I don't mean the other place is wrong, and it don't mean Detroit's wrong.
Right.
We just do things different. But our mantra, our oath is still the same everywhere you go. It's save lives and protect property. I had a buddy, Bobby Martin, and he made it infamous during the Burn movie. He says, until you put your life up as collateral, you don't know what life saving is, right? Until you've done it, you don't know what it is. But we still need people that have done it and know what it is to be able to speak to these young guys. And they're going to get enough of that blue card, that instant command, that gallons per minute, how much it takes to put out fire. At the end of the day, just put the fire out. And that's what I'm here for. Like that's my platform. Just put the fire out. You know.
No,
Yeah.
that's a fact, man. I mean, it's I think that's also another thing that hurts our profession. It's the fact that, well, if you don't do it this way, screw you. And it's like,
Oh, so much of
why are we like that? Like, Dave said it, Dave Miller, Chief, said it best. He was like, at one point people were like, if you don't ride the certain rig, have the certain hose, have the certain gear, you're not. And it's like, what does branding have to do with the job? Like there are different, granted, there are some organizations that can definitely they need a little bit of education in regards to tactics and things like that. But at the end of the day, whether it's a smooth bore, a fog nozzle, Key Hose, Mercedes, whatever else is out there, who, as long as this shit goes out, like, who cares? But man, we eat each other up when it
We
comes to
do.
that.
We are our own worst enemies. And all the top administrative politicians, all the leadership, they just up there just with their hands and they're loving it. They're loving all this division
Yep.
because they got a plan. We're playing checkers and they're playing chess. You know, it's crazy. And some of it's well-meaning young guys. They're like, no, there's no way you can put out a house fire with a red line, a booster line. Because that doesn't make sense, right? They've learned that the gallons aren't enough to do this and that and this. I'm like, I'm here to tell you, you can. I'm not saying you should, but you can do this job with less than stellar equipment or less than stellar water pressure. I couldn't, someone asked me what kind of hose we use. I'm like, I don't know. Inch and a half. I don't know. I don't care. Does it work? Does water go through it? Can I open up the pipe? Well, what do you guys use? Combination. Oh, I don't. How can you even do that? I said, we've been using combination nozzles to put out thousands of fires for decades.
Right.
It can be done.
Right.
I'm not against smoothbore. I actually like them, but to me, it doesn't matter. I don't care what kind of combination nozzle. I don't know. The one that opens and shuts. What kind of gear do you have? I don't know. I think we've had 10 different kinds of gear. Which one do you like better? I don't know. The ones that don't burn me.
Yeah.
What about your PFAS? Man, that's for another person. Don't get me on that PFAS.
Yeah.
I don't even want to be part of that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, Dave, because Dave's a good friend of mine, and he talked to me. He said, "You should be careful what you say, not to you, but because there's so many vultures out there."
Yeah. No, he's
You
right.
know, there's the PFAS game. There's the gallons per minute game. There's the smooth bar cartel. There's all these people that this is the only way you can do it. There's the nozzle forward people. And it's like, yeah, but if that don't work, what are you gonna do? Or how else would you do this? You know, think about what you're doing. And I am 100% for the guys that have made their little mark, and they're doing it. They're learning more about it. They're doing classes. I love that. It's us in general that have to kind of step back and go, that's not the only way.
That's right.
Just so you know, that's not
That's
the only way.
right.
And the guys were like, well, you know, they're personally attacked because it's not the only way. Your mindset's already wrong, bro. This is a job for all kinds of people and to do all kinds of ways. The fire goes out, the faster it goes out, the better off everyone involved is. So when we want to start talking about darkening down rooms because gallons per minute and because the temperature degree variance of all that nerd stuff, at the end of the day, the faster you can put that out, the better off we're going to be. And that's lost in this monetized world
It
of
is.
just put it out. Give me a bucket, give me a sprinkler, give me a red line, give me 2.5, give me 4-inch, give me cellar nozzle. I don't care. Just teach these guys how to put fire out with what they're given by the city that they work with.
That's right. That's right.
And
And I,
go
no, go
ahead.
ahead. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
And I want them to be confident. I want the brotherhood to be strong, because when we're putting out fire, doing what we were created to do, there's a lot less bickering at the firehouse.
Respect. A lot of less time to stir up rumors and bullshit when you're actually doing the job. But
Yeah.
unfortunately, for some organizations, I'd love to work for a Detroit-ish type agency, and I don't, but I wholeheartedly see when we're not running calls, when you give firefighters idle time, that's when stuff goes bad. Rumors, on edge, nobody wants to train, everyone's bitchy, and it's just like, I think the main thing is if we could all just see and understand everyone's perspectives, man, just a little bit. Take that time to hear what they're saying,
Yeah.
digest it, and then come up with your own. It's like, okay, hey, let's have that conversation. But like you said, between the monetizing of the fire services is where I see where we're going off, because it's like like you said, we're creating these little divisions. That's
Yep.
not really bringing us together, because if I'm pro smoothbore and this person's pro fog nozzle, well then we got a war. And it's like, listen
Yeah.
to each other. Hey, this is why. Okay, cool. Well then this is why we use the fog nozzle. Okay, does the fire go out? Sure. Perfect. Boom. Problem solved.
Right,
Like
right. The parents are busy.
everything's up for debate.
Yeah, the parents are busy fighting, and the kids are the one that gets punished.
Yeah.
They're the ones that hurt. Because we're all busy fighting about dumb stuff. Man, get out of here with that nerd stuff. Come back to the table. Let's eat some grub. Let's start cooking in the firehouse again. Let's start hanging out with each other's families. Let's start talking about whatever's going on. Let's be compassionate enough not to be vulnerable enough to say, "Hey, you okay, man? I love you. You mean something to me." You know? That's it. The other side of the fire service is just kind of going away too. But if we could just restore aggressive firefighting and restore the brotherhood, I think we would be much better place.
Absolutely. No, absolutely.
Because you, like you said, you and I are in the fire service wise, in vastly different departments.
Right.
But right now, we're still talking. Both of us have a grin on our face. We get it, you know? That's what it's about. I don't know you from anyone, really. It doesn't matter though, because we can both talk and go, "Yeah, that's what's up. I like that guy. That guy's in. He's my guy," you know? And you know the guys that are not your guy. You've done enough
Oh,
podcasts. You're like, "Yeah, that's definitely not my guy."
yes, sir. Yes, sir. We will steer
Yeah.
clear of that person.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It is. And I hate to see it destroyed from outside and inside forces. But I wish everyone I talked to could just ride a day with me. That would be, to me, fun. Because I can talk, but to ride, to fellowship, I wish everyone, haters and lovers alike, could ride just one day. Just have fun. See what the job really should be about.
Yeah, that's okay. Last question I wanted to ask.
Okay.
What is a typical shift like on I know you're on engine, I want to say 40.
I'm on engine 50 now.
Oh, that's right. Engine 50. Sorry. Yep.
You know, I was at 40s, so because I made sergeant, now I went from the top of the barrel to the bottom of the barrel. So now I'm being pushed around a little bit. I got to find a new home.
Okay.
So I'm at engine 50 for another couple weeks.
Okay.
Then I go back home. I get pushed on this next transfer list. I get pushed to Engine 54 on the west side, which happens to be the place I ran for 18 years. So
Okay.
I'm actually, it's like homecoming for me. So yeah, that's fun. It's the place I grew up. I know every tree that was planted when we built things. It's kind of cool. But typical shift, 24-hour shifts. That's what we do. We're on a 4-unit schedule, 8 days a month. So 24 on, 24 off, 24 on. and then 5 straight days off. And that just keeps going. So when we show up in the morning, we all show up. Our shift starts 8. We usually show up somewhere between 6:30 and 7 for buddy relief, right? Because those people have families. They want to go home. And, you know, you catch that 7:15 fire, it'll screw your whole day up. You know, so we got kids that got to go to school and all that kind of stuff. So set 6:30, 7 o'clock. And then, you know, it's a house, right? We're all staying there for the day. So we get together. We talk about who wants to cook. We give them all the cook the money. We got a commercial kitchen in there-ish, commercial-ish kitchen. And then, you know, he gets out and goes shopping. We do whatever we need to do that day, right? But part of it is fellowship. We usually, in the winter time, whatever's left over from the night before, we put it together and make a soup.
Okay.
So firehouse soup is a big tradition, especially in the colder months. Yeah, paperwork and all that stuff, rig checks. Training isn't a specific time. Each day at firehouses, it varies. Some high firehouses, there is no training. We're pretty much left alone on that kind of stuff. We have some stuff we got to do. Lunch, nap, dinner, in between heart attacks and fires, right?
Right.
We stay, we have a, you know, a cot room, just like a lot of firehouses do. Everyone sleeps in their bed for the day. And yeah. Make work. It's a firehouse is what we call them. I know places like to call them fire stations. The old terms to me are very dear, right? I like that firehouse feel because it's a house,
right?
Which would connotate that that's a family,
right?
You know, fire station seems just clinical, sterile to building. A lot of our firehouses are 100 years old, so they still got the chain. The links where you could chain the horses in. They got stables, haylofts where we now stay and we sleep in haylofts. You know, it's, and then we have newer stations that are very typical of what newer stations would look like.
Okay.
Yeah.
So definitely very, you are a very traditional based history type firefighter. Like, so essentially you still believe in that tradition.
Absolutely, man. These guys have been doing it for hundreds of years since, 1790, 1792. I don't know. It's been a long time. And there's been a lot of people that have come and gone through there to make those, to establish those traditions. So for me to think that I'm bigger than that or I know more, I think we should be very slow to just throw traditions out. They were there for a reason. And they surpass generational differences and government differences and political climates. They stayed. So there's a reason that they're there. Maybe we need to give them a little more value than what we do. Just because the UL laboratories come up with this or building code does this or political climate changes doesn't mean we need to just jump in. You know?
Yeah. No, that's a fact. Love it. I love it. Dave, I really appreciate you coming on, man, talking shop. Appreciate you accepting the message, reading the message, sending me your number, answering the phone call, getting everything together to make this happen. This has been, a conversation. I wish that more firemen across the country, and even firemen within their own organizations, the ones that have, like, you know, everyone's going to have beef and quarrels, but I think at the end of the day, if you can sit down at the table, talk about it, you know, as adults, like we all are, like we all claim to be, I think we can solve a lot of problems just by talking and discussing.
Ain't that the truth, man? And that's fire service. That's America in general.
Right. Right.
You know,
yeah,
that's what I love. And for me, that's what I love about the fire service. It doesn't care about your pigmentation, your socioeconomics. It doesn't care. I got guys on this job that if we were outside this job, we probably would have never been friends, but we're friends. I got guys that I don't even like, but I respect because that guy saved my life or made a good decision here. It's Something about the fire service just transcends. Probably a little like the military on the lower levels. Something about frontline people. It just transcends all those differences and just breaks us down to our lowest level. We're just human beings, dudes just trying to make a living.
And that's the perfect way to end this. So I want to say I appreciate you very much for coming on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Come on and come over to the city and ride with me.
Oh, I got another place I'm invited to. Awesome. I write it up, put it on the notepad, man.
Yeah.
I'll hold you to it.
I love it, man.
All right, pal. You have a great day.
All right, man. We'll talk soon.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.